So before I get into the thing or the matter I want to talk about today, I want to make sure anybody have any questions, anybody about the meditation we did today or meditation in general, or there have been talks over these past weeks, anything you have a question about. I was here 2 weeks ago and I talked about an aspect of communication and conflict resolution and gossiping and things like that. So any questions? Those who are new today, new to meditation, new to calming and quieting the mind. Whenever I have the silence, I'm not quite sure whether it's the silence of everybody's in complete understanding or people just are too shy or we have all kinds of stuff. So just check your mind. Any questions? Everything clear? If it is, just nod your head so I get some sort of sense that people aren't just indulging me or something. Okay, good. In the opening verse, it says, before I gave the talk, you said something to the effect about liberating ourselves from the delusive self. Am I quoting you correctly? And talked about the superiority, the inferiority, and the equality complexes of self. So obviously this is a theme that I continually return to because it's at really the heart of the Buddhist teaching, this matter of self, non-self, not self, all kinds of variations, and delusive self, which for people who believe they have a self or they are themselves, to hear it's a delusive self doesn't feel very good, right? No, nobody wants to be delusive. So this whole idea of self, which is again central to the Buddhist realization and Buddhist psychology, as it's coming here to the West, you know, Buddhism is sort of coming to the West, coming to America over these last 30, 40, 50 years, it's running smack into a culture and a psychology which is sort of based on the opposite, right? We live in a culture that is highly individualistic, right? We all know that, right? And which means that from a very early age, we're acculturated to really seeing ourselves as individuals separate from, right? And we're very focused on giving ourself as much agency as we can get for it. Right? And we are in a culture that often rewards individual for their individual attainments and success. Do I need to go on? But you know, these are the messages that we are receiving, and we can talk more about this. From early on, as well as when our self, or whatever we identify with ourself, we go to a mental health person, right, who basically comes at the problems, psychological, emotional, behavioral problems that people have in terms of helping the self become more functional, right? Helping the self remediate the problems that it's having. Is that clear? Anybody been, you know, that's what it's all about, right? The interesting thing is the Buddha, in his great enlightenment and in his teachings for 30, 45 years, he said, the reason human beings suffer is because they believe that their self is a permanent, solid thing, and they totally identify with it. And so all the emotional dramas of our life are not to be simply remediated by helping the self become more adaptable or see more clearly, but by seeing that fundamentally this overweening a total identity with myself as a separate thing, with, or as it said, the I, me, mine, is the very root of our suffering. That's kind of radical. So please don't just go, all right, what's next, Fred? I mean, this is, you know, I saw there's a book out, I don't know if I got this right, you know, there are lots of books about Buddhism and mindfulness. So it was something like No Self, No Problem. Is that a current book? Right? Which I thought said it all. No self, no problem. The opposite is what? Self, problems. Self, issues. Self, dramas. And if we really think about our life and the life of our family, friends, colleagues, a lot of what we're dealing with every day is what? What? Self and its dramas, its issues, its problems. So let's just stop a minute. Is that true? Just close your eyes. Is that true? And many of the psychological, emotional problems that are very common in our society, such as fears, anxieties, worries, angers, resentments, sadnesses, despair, are all dramas of self, of me. I'm worried and concerned about what's going to happen to me or how I am going to deal with this. I am disappointed in that person. I am hurt by what that person did do or didn't do. Think about all the issues, your personal issues, your interpersonal issues, and see if all of them have an I, me, mine at the center of it. There is something that is robbing us of our capacity to be happy, content, at peace within ourselves, within our interactions. What is that thief? Who is that thief? Right. That is robbing us of this capacity. There's a little analogy that says there's a robber in our house and we're looking for him or her outside the house. If there's somebody stealing from you, you keep missing things, where are you going to look? You're going to go outside? Run around the neighborhood? No. We want to find that person that's robbing us of our happiness and well-being, that's causing us to go, you know, to have a strong emotional life that's up and down and back and forth, and happy and not happy, and calm and agitated. And in our culture, we accept that degree of agitation as what? As normal. It's normal. It's very important. It's normal. And when we get together with each other, we talk about this as like it's normal. The Buddha said, no, it's not normal. There's a cause of why we experience these kind of afflictive emotions. that the mind is inherently, what can we say? The mind inherently is always in a state of well-being at a deep level. That there's a place of calmness and inner peace and stability always available to us, and this is our true mind. And yet, because we identify with all the dramas that are continually arising from our identification as a separate self, we don't experience that. Right. And one of the reasons I want to talk about this today, because I think meditation and mindfulness has been oversold. And I'm saying this as the founder teacher of the Florida Community of Mindfulness, so I want to go on record. Because a lot when I talk to people, especially people who are kind of newer to the practice, they're often frustrated or disappointed. Because even though they're trying to establish a meditative practice and become more mindful in their daily life and more present, still, the emotionality of their suffering continues. Right. And for people who practice mindfulness and self-awareness, it often feels like it's gotten worse because we're more aware of it, we're more present to it. Before we were just driven by it. So I think it's important that we understand while mindfulness and meditation are very much parts of our transformative path, it is this central identification or misidentification with a separate permanent self that exists over time within ourselves and others, which is the major delusion that we all suffer for. So it's a common delusion. So we all talk this way. We all think that, you know, I'm me, you're you. Now that's sort of true. So why don't I just stop a second? Any questions up to now? Yes. Yeah, so we do that because there are a lot of people online and they can't hear. Yes.
Thank you, Fred.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is true. I think this is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the reminder on it.
Mm-hmm.
And?
But?
Not a but.
Okay,
and
okay.
Not a disagreement with it.
Okay, no, it's fine, but people who are new, you can disagree too. So I'm just giving you permission to speak your truth.
Thank you. Yeah. Stolen focus, stolen attention, stolen ability for mindfulness. There can be a robber inside mm-hmm. and outside who comes in and takes. The modern, for example, surveillance capitalism, extremely fast information flowing in, tracking and using psychology by experienced engineers who understand my mind more than me to get me distracted.
Okay.
That is a powerful external force that I feel is affecting me and my ability to practice.
Yeah.
And non-self is important on top of that.
Yeah, so let me just say, exactly.
Glad we're in agreement. I wanted to talk through
and
it.
And I'm not, you know, whether you call it, whatever you want to call it, I don't know about surveillance capital, but everyone you call it, yes, there is a world that we all live in, right? Is that true? And we live in a world, especially these days because of technology, and you've heard me talk about that, it's like we're dealing with things the Buddha never could imagine 2,600 years ago in northern India, right? I mean, so I agree with you. Which makes even more important because all of that information, all of that very sophisticated manipulation, they're all doing it, trying to do what? To get into our mind and manipulate us to buy, to purchase, to view, right? Okay. That's why it's so important that we know who we truly are, and what is the nature of our mind. That's exactly right. That even makes more of a case. Because all that stuff that's coming into us, through our little screens, our big screens, our conversations, our right? All the things of the world, all the data, right? Through our eyes, through our ears, through our nose, through our mouth, through our bodies, through our mind, we are endlessly getting data. Is that clear? I was speaking at Wake Up last week, and I was saying, you know, and they're all in their 20s and 30s, a lot of them, you know, in college or recently out of college. And when I said to them, you know, it's like, you've been putting information inside, you know, the education system, society has been putting information, data into your mind since kindergarten. I mean, not saying like that's bad, but I'm saying that's what it's about. But nobody, I said, you know, I asked them, has anybody ever told you what the mind is and how to use the mind correctly? No. No. It's just all information, theory, ideas, right? Just, okay. But this mind in which it's all going into, this is what we're talking about. Is that clear? It's like food, right? Healthy food, unhealthy food, junk food, nutritious food, all of that goes in through the mouth. And it's digested and then becomes our body. And various kinds of foods have different effects on our body, right? Knowing the difference between wholesome, unwholesome, healthy, unhealthy, gives us an opportunity to make healthy choices. Right? We understand that in terms of our body, but we don't understand that in terms of our mind. Why not? One, because nobody ever taught us about, you know, the things we consume are affecting our mind. Especially, not only the external stuff, because the external stuff is external. You know, I'd say to you, how does it get into your mind? And once it's in your mind, what do you do with it? We what? Ruminate, think about, act on. True? If you don't do any of that, it has no power over you. It just goes through. Right? Things appear and disappear. Thoughts arise, and, you know. If I said to everybody, how many experiences have you had already today since you got up? Every little, you know, just every little momentary. How many experiences?
Too many.
What?
Too many to count.
Too many already. And it's only 11:02. Right? How many thoughts have you had since you got up this morning? You know, how many different kinds of emotions and sensations have passed through your body, mind? How many things have you seen? How many things, sounds have you heard already? Countless. That's what's happening. But they're all being filtered and processed by the mind. That's why the Buddha said, you know, it's the mind we need to pay attention to. Because all those things that are happening, all those manipulations you're concerned about, they're happening in your mind. And if we don't know how to have a healthy mind, if we don't know how to deal with the information that's been coming into us, and we hold on to it, and we regurgitate it, and we obsess about it, and we ruminate, what's going to happen? We're not going to be at ease. We're not going to be calm. We're not going to be happy because it's always stirred up. Okay. So this is, I mean, there's a lot here. Thank you for your question. Any other questions? Good. Yeah, over here. Anybody online has a question, they chatted into Dee Dee's up there. Yes.
My question's a little more simple.
Good.
So if we come to meditation to know our mind, relax our body, If there's no self, then whose mind and whose body are we?
Yeah, thank you for the question. That's where we're going.
Okay.
Good. Right. Yeah. That's. Yeah. I just. Okay. You know, I just want to take it step by step because that's. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, let me just turn it around. In the Buddhist meditative tradition, we begin with calming, stabilizing. The analogy being, if you want to see to the bottom of a lake or a pond, you can't keep walking around and stirring up the muck. Clear? Right. So if you want to see what's in there, you got to stop, right? And let the sediment settle, and then you can see. So in Buddhist meditation, they're really sort of there's a lot, but there's basically two parts. The first part is calming, stabilizing the mind, sort of we did today. And the second part is looking into and developing understanding and wisdom about our mind. But usually the stabilizing and the clarifying comes first, just so we can kind of, I mean, as we're jumping around like this, it's hard to even take a look, right? So it's like that. Okay, one more question? Yes. Then I want to come back to yours. Yes.
Lynette says, we respond to threats to the self or family without thinking. It's an instinct to step between a threat and a child, mm-hmm. and we do so without going through a thought process. Mm-hmm. What is instinct in relation to the self mind?
All right, so we're sort of going in that direction. Yes, we have bodies, and we have a biological kind of imperatives, right? Is that clear? Yeah. Yeah. We respond to threats how? What? With action. And we know in the fear, you know, the action is either to defend or to attack. But, I mean, you know, but, yeah, so... Yeah, there's all kinds of biological imperatives. So let me just begin by clarifying one thing. The Buddha never taught there is no self. So when you read that, that is wrong. The Buddha taught something much more sophisticated. He taught what appears as a self is not really a solid permanent thing. Can you see the difference? For example, a bubble. Anybody ever blow bubbles or see kids blowing bubbles? When the bubbles are rising up, we think they're what? Real things. Watch kids who don't know that. Ever see a kid and then they reach, grab the bubble and it's not there, you see this amazed disappointment, right? Because they thought what? That bubble that appeared to be solid, round thing, doesn't really have a permanent existence. Like a mirage. Anybody ever been in the desert or anywhere and seen a mirage? Anybody ever seen a mirage? Okay. When you saw the mirage, did it look real? Like there was really a water out there, a body of water? And if you went in that direction to actually... you would see what? No. It appeared, but upon investigation, we see that what appeared to be solid and real was not real. Another analogy, of course, is the rainbow. Anybody ever see a rainbow? Yes, we all go, what? Look at the rainbow, how beautiful. Is that true? But has anybody ever tried to find the rainbow? Anybody ever try that? Why not? There it is. And there's a pot of gold right at the end of it. We've been told that. Why don't we get in our car and chase after it? Anybody have a good answer to that? It's an illusion. Right? And to believe an illusion is real, like a cognitive process, is a delusion. Okay? So this is very important. The Buddha did not say that we don't have some kind of subjectivity, right? Seeing, you know, there is a sense that this is me. Everybody have that sense? Like, this is me. Now, the problem is we think and identify this sense of me with a solid, permanent thing over time. Shall we talk about that for a moment? How does this happen? Well, I mean, there are many ways to look at it. Let's just look at it sort of psychologically, developmentally. Once upon a time, we were babies. Is that true? See, that's a statement of truth. Everybody here at one point was a baby. Did we have language? No. Did we come in and announce to our parents, this is my name? I want to be called Fred in this lifetime. What? Yes. Okay. So we come into this world, everybody comes into this world without an identity, but yet there's a subjective experience. When the baby is hungry, it does what? It cries. Biological, you know, it has its biological, you know, when it's cold, what does it do? When it's, you know, right, so, right? When it gets scared, what does it do? Right. So that fundamental, we might say, instinctual, reactive sense of being is part of all human life and animal life. Is that true? But then what begins to happen, my friends? Very early on in life, you're told what? Yeah, you're given identities. You're told what? You are, I am, and this is Daddy, and this is Mommy, and this is Nana, and this is, right? You begin to label the world and begin to label yourself as a separate entity. Now, when you're 1 or 2 years old, there's not a lot of baggage to that. Right? Because there's not a lot of language, there's not a lot of memory, there's really no baggage. Yeah, so it's okay. But think about what's happened to you over time. As you've encountered the world and processed that world, that sense of me begins to build up a what? Yeah, a narrative. And the narrative is made up of, it gets more and more elaborate. So what began as just kind of a robust, kind of non-self sense of me, subjectivity, now takes on a separate identity as, well, just close your eyes. Close your eyes and say to yourself, me, and give yourself your name. And attach to that the story of your life. I was born here, I went there, I did this. You know, all the stuff, all the things. You know, all the labels, my profession, the kind of person I am, right? I'm an extrovert, I'm an introvert. You know, I'm the greatest, I'm the worst. I'm whole, I'm fractured, right? I'm good, I'm bad. I'm lovable, I'm unlovable, I'm worthy, I'm unworthy. Of all the labels, all the words, all the narrative we have now added on. We have fleshed out this very subjective, natural sense of being, responding to the world, right, has now become reified and solidified into a permanent identity. Right? So we will say, I was born as if this one here had a permanent identity that's goes back, you know, I'm going to be 79 next month, so that's almost 8 decades. Right? Think of all the experiences, all the people, all, right? Good, bad. I carry them, if I didn't know better, as a narrative that that's who I am. Now, coming to, what's your, I forget your name.
Dina.
Dina, yeah. Now, this is where we begin. So we begin with this very sense of solidity and kind of encasement in ourself and all its stuff. It's good stuff, it's bad stuff, it's issues, it's past, it's future, it's all its identities, right? Another word could be identities, right? And we use meditation to investigate. Is that true? The same way, if I saw a rainbow and I thought, it's real, I get in the car and I drive, what's going to happen? Eventually what? Anybody ever heard what? 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 I can't hear you. Right. And at some point you come to the realization, what? It appeared, but it's not a real self-existent thing. It's not like always there. This was one of the fundamental realizations of the Buddha, that everything is in constant motion. And we are just part of that constant motion. That constant interaction. Thich Nhat Hanh called that interbeing. We inter-are with the world and experience. But our experience is not that inter-are. That experience is, I'm here, the world is out there, and either I get as much as I can of it, right? Pleasure principle, get as much as I know. Self likes what? Self likes pleasure. Self likes to feel good. Self wants what it wants, true? Or else we fend off the things that we don't like, the things we don't want to happen. So our self is always in a state of, I call it war, strong, but I call it war. I mean, we're always on guard to defend and attack, to hold on to get. Anybody ever been in a war zone? Anybody ever been in a war zone? A couple of people have been in a war zone. Nice and relaxing and peaceful, eh? Was that true? Yeah, but it's, you know what I'm saying. It's, right? No. You can't relax, can you? Because why? Because you're in a war zone. There's always, you know, something going on that you've got to be aware of, right? That's the way we have become, because of this overweening identification with a separate self. Now, If Fred is a permanent, solid Fred, right? That when he looks in his mind, he cannot find that. But more than that, all your thoughts, like take some of the thoughts that you really hold on to in terms of how you define yourself. Anybody want to give me some of their thoughts? Or it doesn't have to be you, just the way people define themselves. I'm a what? I'm a failure. That's a thought. Anybody else?
Introvert.
I'm an introvert. Thought. I'm competent. Right? Anybody else?
I am worthy.
I'm worthy? Yeah, good. I'm worthy. Anybody else? We all have these. I'm helpful. I'm a good person. I'm smart. You know? Over here, I'm stupid. Right? I'm lovable. I'm unlovable. A lot of times we have all these contradictory ones. Right? We have the ones we show outside and yet the ones we have inside. And yet, none of the thoughts are permanent, solid things, are they? Is that thought continually, nonstop, embedded in your mind all day long, right? No. It just pops in circumstances. if it's real, there's got to be a permanence to it. But our thoughts are continually in process, continually arising and disappearing. Is that true? When you watch your mind in meditation, are you choosing what thoughts you're going to have? What's going to arise next? Everybody just sat in meditation. Is that every thought you chose? You knew what was going to arise next? No. It's totally out of our control. Thoughts are just arising. Feelings are arising. Things are just happening. Did everybody pick their childhood? Huh? No, you didn't choose your childhood. You didn't choose how your life was going to unfold and how they were going to treat you and how the kids were going to react to you and how you didn't have control over any of that? Think about it, did you? No. What? Life just happens. What is life? We see. We're endlessly seeing, you know. Any scientist can describe that process, right? And yet, sounds are just vibrations. And yet, our mind is continually trying to make sense of everything, filtering everything, to align with what? These structures we have in our mind. So therefore, that beautiful example, when Fred said, how are people feeling? Too warm for anybody? And some people said what? What? Yeah. And some people said, no, comfortable. So there's no such real thing as anything, really. It's all subjective. And the subjectivity is no longer a subjectivity we had when we were children, when we were natural and responsive. We have vast filters, right? So if your filter is, I'm unworthy, what's going to happen? What? Yeah, you're going to think you're unworthy, and you're going to always be looking for affirmation, just like with hot and cold, right? Yeah, you're always going to be looking for affirmation that, you know, you're unworthy. Right? It doesn't matter how many worthy things you do. It doesn't matter. Right? If you have a filter that goes in your mind, a structure about yourself, you know, I'm incompetent, yeah. Everything that you could possibly pick from experience that reifies your sense of incompetency, your belief in your thoughts, we will cling to. Anything that doesn't support that, we will what? Filter out like a filter. So we don't realize that each of us, well, we're not free, my friends. What are we not free of? We are not free of a self, a belief in an identity that actually we created unconsciously. This is very important. We created it unconsciously. We're just kids, right? Coming into a family, getting all kinds of messages from the family about what life's about and who I am and who I'm not and kids in the street and right and all this. And this little kid is trying to make sense of it in their little, tiny little minds. Right? And then, it keeps going on as the years go on. And so we put together this whole story, taking these bits and pieces of life experience, and then reify that into a narrative that's me. And that it is that narrative, that belief construct that we have about who I am and who I'm not, and how I get what I want, and how I don't get what I don't want. And for some people, it's like, how do I keep myself cool and the temperature just the way I like it, and not too high, and other people want to bring it down. It's always great at retreat, you know. That's why we take over the thermostat. Why is that? Because, you know, all of a sudden somebody's going over there, turning it down. 20 minutes later, somebody's going over there, turning it up. You know, that's just the way it is. So let's stop. I mean, this is, what am I telling you? This is the Buddha's message, you know. The fundamental cause of all our suffering, and we're talking about our self-created suffering, our emotional suffering, is because of this strong identification I have with I, me, mine, that I'm a permanent, solid thing over time. You know, what is it that connects us to the five-year-old? What? Memories. And where do memories occur? In our mind. They're just thoughts. They're just images. They're not real, are they? They're something we put together. You know, that's great. Right? You're right. Memory is a function of our mind. And that is what we've done. Now, do you have complete recall of every moment you've ever had? So, you know, lots of research on memories. Memories are incredibly subjective. Right? Incredibly subjective, totally distorted by the person. That's just the way it is, right? So, you know, how we've selectively put together the memory of my experiences is also highly selective and based on my construct. If my sense of myself is I'm damaged, then when I go into my memories, what do I access? What? Yeah, traumas, all the things, right? Yeah. And yet the truth is what? Is that all that ever happened to me over the thousands and millions of moments? No. But we filter and we create a story about who I am, and then we don't realize that as we're going through our day every day, that unconscious self and all its narrative is filtering my experience. Which means filtering my emotional responses to life. Which means the dramas of my life are self-created. Now, this doesn't stir anybody up and go, no, that's not true. Come on. Questions? I mean, this is, I want to talk about this with you because this is big. I once, somebody sent me a talk by this, is he a neuroscientist or cognitive scientist who did that book about the self and non-self? It starts with an N. What? It's a very well-known book. He's a very interesting. I mean, basically, he's a cognitive or a neuroscientist or something, and he basically talks about the science of the mind and the body-mind, basically saying there is absolutely no evidence for a self, just the opposite, right? And he says, when he gives that lecture to his students, he's always amazed that at the end of the lecture, they just sit there. And he says something like I just said to you. He says, like, I just sent something that is totally different than everything you believe, and you're just sitting there taking notes. I mean, do you get the implications of what I'm saying? Is there anybody here that does not have emotional issues that they deal with in life? Personal, interpersonal. Is there anybody here? Okay. So this is, you know, we're not, this is the Buddha's response to the human condition that he was experiencing 2,600 years ago. So this is like for everyone. Is this true? Can you even begin to see, could it possibly be that this me that I identify with as me is a distortion? And it's distorting reality, and it is the cause of all my emotional issues, even my interpersonal issues. nobody's going to challenge me? Yes. No, no, this is for the people. We have a lot of people on Zoom. They can't hear.
I know intellectually what you're saying is true. I don't have any doubt about it. But there's an energy, there's some energy, that as many times as I can listen to my story, just keeps me locked to it and chained to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, thank you. Yeah, so this is the problem. You know, in Buddhism, the afflictive mind is, and the afflictive mind states are called kleshas, K-L-E-S-A, or K. Kleshas means coverings, right? It's an interesting word. I mean, that's what it means, coverings. It means that when we're in those afflictive states, this, our true mind, or, you know, the mind of truth or the mind of knowing, is covered. And it's covered in two ways. One is through wrong views, cognitive, but emotions that our stories about who we are, especially our afflictive ones, have a whole valence of afflictive emotions. Fears, sadnesses, despairs, angers, resentments, sadnesses, right? And that is the potency of what you're talking about, right? And in the cognitive world, it's known emotion always trumps, nothing to do with that trump, emotions always trump cognitions. So when there's an emotionality, intensity, yeah. Hard, right? Yeah. So that's why mindfulness is so important. Because in mindfulness practice, how many people are new today? How many people are fairly new to all this? Yeah. So one of the things in meditation and mindfulness that we're developing is this capacity to observe our mind, which means thoughts, feelings, perceptions, in a non-reactive way. That's a strength. Anybody ever work out? Why do you work out? You're building what? Muscle strength of what? Body strength. Right? In meditation, mindfulness, we're building the more important strength, which is mental strength. Very important. If we don't have it, you can't do the heavy lifting. Right? Right? The same way, if you don't have any strength, you can't do much lifting. Right? You know, there's not a lot of strength there. In the same way, if our mind doesn't have any capacity for any kind of mindful awareness, that we can be aware of a thought, a feeling, a memory, and not get swept by reactivity, which is what you're talking about, yeah, it's not going to work. And that's another, you know, that's another conundrum that people who are new to meditation or just taking a piece of it, you know, struggle with, right? But you know, it takes a certain kind of willingness to give training to our mind so we can have a healthy mind. In the same way, it's going to take time if our bodies are very weak, right? It's going to take time to build up some strength. We all know that, right? Yeah. It's the same way. And this is more important. Because the happiness, unhappiness, agitation, calmness, stability, instability are all arising in our minds, nowhere else. Right? There is somebody that all that information is processing. And that's you. And if you don't know what's going on, if you don't have awareness of what's going on, and you don't have the capacity to look clearly at what's going on, yeah, very easy. You know, I don't know about surveillance capitalism, but I know about there's something going on inside our minds that is distorting things. How about if I called so much of what appears in our mind fake news? You know, have you heard, anybody hear about fake news? It's like everybody talks about, you know, it, you know, if you're on this side, that's fake news. If you're on this side, that's fake news. All right? Fake news means what? It's not true. And yet each of us have these beliefs about ourselves and life that fundamentally aren't true. And yet we believe they're true. Yeah, sad. So we want to, you know, that's in Buddhism we talk about waking up. Yeah, we want to wake up to who we really are. No, in the Buddha said what? Inherently we're Buddhas. Inherently we all have this pure, awakened mind, unconditioned, and it's right here. And everybody might be going, well, why don't I experience that? What? What's he talking about? When I think to my mind, I go, there's this crazy, neurotic thing that's always moving around and agitated. It's always in crisis. It's always got, right? Yeah, that's the covering. That's the covering. We built up layers of covering. But our true mind is right here. That's the good news. And meditation is that way that we can learn to look and touch, you know, that aspect of our mind that's true, but also see the unreality of our beliefs. Is that true? I mean, everybody here has fundamental beliefs about who you are. Is that true? Okay. So just close your eyes and pull them up. Pull a couple of your favorites. Then ask yourself, are they true? Are they absolutely true? That these beliefs I have about myself or other people? Open your eyes a second. Anybody ever been angry at anybody? When you're angry at that person, what do you think about that person? Be honest. When you're really angry at that person, hurt by that person, what are your thoughts about that person? What? They're wrong. That's only for beginning. They're wrong, but what else? Come on. What? Negative. They're a problem. Well, want to kill them. Yeah, well, that's we can go there if it's unchecked. Yeah. Yeah, they're bad. Right? How did I ever end up with somebody like this? Right? And I thought they were a good person. Everybody have that kind of thoughts, right? A lot of distress. They want to hurt me. Now, let's say the next time you run into them, they're very nice to you. And they do something very nice and complimentary to you. What do you think? What? Come on, be honest. What do you, what?
They've changed.
Yeah. I mean, can you see even this kind of stuff, it's so variable. All our judgments about people, they're based on what? Me. Right? Today they're treating me the way I want to be treated. Do I like them? Yes. Today they're treating me not like I want to be treated. Do I like them? No. It's all based on what? Me and the way I want the world to treat me. Me. So it's hard to see people as they really are as long as we are endlessly dividing the world up. Is there anybody here who believes inside, outside, and at the deepest level of their being, they are only good. They only have wholesome, noble thoughts about everything. Is there anybody who believes that? Don't be embarrassed if you really think that you're just only one step away from full Buddhahood or Christhood or whatever. Right. Yeah, the truth is, and I don't care how we present ourselves to the world, because many of us have mastered kind of our social face and how we present ourselves to the world, but when we look inside, we know what? It's a mess. Or there's stuff in there that I really don't want people to see. But sometimes it'll come out. I mean, that's just the truth, isn't it? And on the other hand, you know, is there anybody here at the from the top to the bottom are all bad? What? No. So we're all in process. And a lot of the what we're in process is just the way we've responded to the messages of the world. I don't know about surveillance capitalism, but I know about parents. They're very sophisticated in how they mold us, don't they? Society, culture, you know, there's lots of, yeah, there's lots of influences. Okay, another way to look at this is, what's another way? Oh, my grandson, he has Legos, right? So when I was a kid, we didn't have Legos. I think we had what we have. It's going way back. Lincoln Logs? Is that dating me? All right. How many were there in the set? How many logs were there? 20, 30, right? I walk into his room. He must have a million Legos. Right? I don't know if you ever grab me. These days, they're just endless sets of Legos, right? I mean, there's so many of them in all different kinds and sizes. So his capacity to create more and more things, right, is much more than somebody who has a Lego set of only 20. Okay. So when we were young children, perhaps, the stuff that we were building our sense of self with was much smaller, you see. But now, it's big. So many pieces, and we built this elaborate structure. Fortunately, the good news is none of it's real in any solid, permanent way. Right? Anybody ever be around young children? They build the blocks. What do they like doing? Knocking them down. Right? If you wanted it to be there forever, your response to knocking it down would be what?
No.
No, right? Anger, sadness, hurt, you know, all kinds of emotional stuff. But if you know that that structure never had any solidity or permanence at all, it was just made up of pieces, all subject to impermanence. Yeah, you could be a little, you know, we're human, a little disappointed, but not big, big. Because we know, yeah, at some point it was all going to fall down and go back in the box. Right? Some point this body's going to fall down and go back into the box. Isn't that the way it is? Yeah. Body, mind, nothing solid. All, you know, so many variables. I don't know any science. I mean, how many cells are in the body? Jun, how many cells are in the body? What?
Lots,
thank you. Thank you for your scientific answer. Right. You know what I'm saying? It's like amazing, right? This body, this one body is, you know, it's amazing what the process that goes on. Much less you look out into the universe and you see these pictures of endless universes. I mean, it's just this whole thing that just unfolding that we're part of. We're not separate from. But when we believe we're separate from, That's where we get that emotionality. But when we feel part of things, when we feel part of life, part of relationships, participants in, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, we feel we inter are with all life and all beings, it's much more relaxed. Are there other questions or statements? Yes.
Sherry says,
yes.
You say if it's real, it would be permanent. Why can't reality be mutable?
Well, again, when I use the word, or Buddhists use the words reality, they mean people who think, so in reality is defined in this way as believing whatever I'm seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, or even thinking is somehow a solid, permanent thing. The truth is things aren't solid or permanent, nothing is. Everything is mutable, everything is changing, everything is appearing and disappearing. Is that true? I mean, that's just true. Is anybody today having the same experiences they were having 10 years ago? Why not? And yet we still think, I'm the same person, but we're not the same person. We sort of have a continuity, you know. But it's not the same. There's nothing real or permanent or solid. Yeah, so there's endless mutability. It's endlessly changing, unfolding. But how can we participate in the true unfolding of who we really are if we're stuck in a belief about who we are? You see? If every time, you know, we don't believe that we have the opportunity to change. So somebody said introvert, right? Introvert, extrovert, right? So that's, for whatever reasons, sort of the way you're showing up in life and have showed up in life. But if you wanted to learn to be more extroverted and let go of the idea that I'm an introvert, and wanted to say, no, I want to learn to be more social, more gregarious, more outreaching, could you do it? Has anybody ever done it? What? Yeah. Yeah. But you have to let, if you have a strong belief that you can't change, that you're stuck with the way you've been conditioned, yeah, you won't change. It's all mutable. It's all changeable. Everybody here. Because nothing's solid fixed. Look in your mind, everybody close your eyes. Look in your mind right now. Pick out your favorite solid permanent belief about who you are and see. Is that belief a solid real thing? Just look directly at it. Positive or negative? Is it a solid real thing? Permanent over time? Everything that we've been talking about today, you can verify for yourself. None of this is theoretical, dogmatic. And you can do it by just looking into your own mind. Again, did anybody ever teach us this? No. So this is the great gift that we're receiving as these teachings and traditions are now coming, you know, to our country, to our culture. So, wow. It's a very different way of looking at things. Any other questions or challenges or just, you know, what do you do now? Yes.
So we start out at the beginning and we're
not... Is that on?
Okay. Can you hear me, Fred?
Oh, yeah, just hold it like that.
Sorry.
That's it. Okay.
So we're starting out basically as infants, as tabula rasa, And we
more or less. I mean,
we go in. We go into the world, and we're introduced to things that are good and are beneficial to us, and things that are really bad and hurt us.
Yes.
And these become seeds within us.
Yes.
So when we're introduced to an environment that is similar, or even a replication of what that is, then we are responding the way that we have ingrained a response. And the more we respond in that way, the more entrenched that habit becomes.
Right. Until we reach the point where we believe that it's real, that this is really what's happening.
Right.
So, and that's where we get stuck. Go on.
And that's the question.
What?
So if that's why I think what was mentioned earlier, why it's so hard to break that habit. Conceptually, it's very, very simple to understand. But practically, how do we make that transition? And it seems like...
Can I ask you a question?
Pardon?
Remember that famous joke about how do you get, somebody asked, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Anybody ever hear that? Does everybody know what Carnegie Hall is? All right. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice. I wish I could give you, you got to practice. First of all, you got to be convinced, theoretically, conceptually, of this truth, by analyzing, by all that. And then this willingness to begin to look at the things that are arising in our mind as impermanent, non-solid things that basically have nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me. They're just arising and passing, causing conditions. It has nothing to do with me. Because how do I know that? Because I can just watch them arise and pass away. I can label them. I can let them go. So they're not part of me. Now, in the beginning, that's like new information. It's a struggle. But over time, we get it. In Buddhism, they use this terminology, waking up, awakening. Right? What does that mean? Anybody ever sleep deeply? What? And when do you just get up, ready to go? What happens when you wake up? In the beginning is what? Where am I? what's going on? What's today? Right? Yeah. But as the morning progresses, for some people they need their coffee or their tea, all of a sudden we become what? Awake. The mind's alert. The mind's awake and can see clearly. It's like that. So it's not instantaneous. It's a process. Becoming more wakeful, becoming more present, becoming more aware. Right? Yeah. Very important. It's a process. That's why we have to practice. That's why we need teachings and communities to support us in this transformative journey. It's a journey. Right? Many of us have been on a journey in the world, right? We've been on a personal journey, interpersonal journeys in relationships. We've been in professional career journeys, we've journeyed around the world, we've had lots of journeys, right? This is a journey, but it's an internal journey. It's the journey of knowing ourselves, knowing who we really are, knowing what life really is. And when we do that, then we have the capacity of dealing with life in an intelligent, compassionate, open way. That's the truth. But it doesn't happen overnight. I wish it could. The Buddha said, this is 2,600 years ago, 2,600 years ago, he said to his disciples, I wish I could do it for you. He really said that. You know, I wish I could do it for you, but I can't. All I can do is give you the teachings. All I can do is support you, inspire you, encourage you. But this is your journey. Everybody's got to wake themselves up. Okay? This is our journey. Where does it begin? With mindfulness. Okay, last question, and then we'll...
Morning, Fred. As we're talking about all this stuff, I am thinking a lot about caretaking role and
caretaking.
Yeah, aging parents, and I also do it for a living. Mm-hmm. And I find that when I'm in that role, there's this constant dichotomy of wanting to protect the self from the pain of what you're experiencing, and by empathizing with their suffering, and the desire to become selfless, so you're showing up for them, and I'm responding and being there for their needs and what they need the most.
Yeah.
And as my parents age, and I really want to show up and I want to be there for everything, mm-hmm. I find that there is this struggle that I also don't want to lose myself in that process. And you're laughing.
No, I'm laughing because...
I guess this is what everybody
said. I'm not laughing. I'm laughing because, yeah, you're right. This is it.
I don't know where to be, and you always feel just overall guilt that I'm not in the right spot.
Well,
I just don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah, you're always in the right spot, and you can never get it wrong. But you can grow. And that is the dilemma, right? Between leading a non-self, more selfless life, and leading a more self-focused, self-centric, right? I mean, this is the dichotomy, right? Yeah, welcome to the club. That's why I was laughing. It was like, you were saying it like, wow, I mean, look what I'm going through. And I said, yeah, this is what we all go through. This is practice, right? So it's how do I move? You know, it's in a way, it's funny. I think it sounds a little strange, but it's sort of like, how do I take this sense of self, which begins so self-centered, so focused on its own needs, its own wants, its own pleasures, its own life, and how do I reform it that it is more selfless, which means it's thinking more of others, it's concerned about the bigger picture. Yeah, that's the journey, right? So the journey is internal, like you got to resolve that for yourself, but then it... You know, it's in response to life. So that's why all these kinds of are good, because it's what you said, there it is. And you want to be able to respond to the suffering of people around you with a good heart, not with a heart that's struggling. Yeah, so practice helps us resolve that. Okay, but that's good. You know, we don't wake up in some alternative universe, right? Where everything is wonderful and, you know, the birds sing all the time and Bambi frolics around, you know, it's not... No. We wake up in this, okay? And this is life. And we want to wake up in the mess of life and learn how to navigate it and skillfully, intelligently, compassionately. Yep, you got it. Thank you. So thank you, everyone.